This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. People have been dancing some form of the waltz since the 16th century, and by the mid-18th century, it was the most popular dance in Europe. Even in the beginning, it was considered slightly scandalous. The dancers held each other so tight that in some cases, their faces actually touched. It was still considered riotous and indecent in England as late as the 1820s. But these days, when most people think of the waltz, they think of the elegance of 19th century Vienna and the Strauss family. In particular, Johann Strauss the Younger, the man known as the Waltz King. In 1906, Maurice Ravel began sketching out a piece that he called Wien, the German word for Vienna. It was to be a tribute to Johann Strauss, but he was distracted by various other projects and never finished it. In the meantime, World War I had raged across Europe, changing the world, including Vienna and Ravel, forever. In 1919, Ravel went back to Wien, thanks to a commission from the great ballet producer Serge Diaghilev. Ravel and Diaghilev had had a huge success in 1912 with Daphnis and Chloe, but Diaghilev said he saw no choreographic possibilities in the new work, which was now titled La Valse. He said it was not a ballet, but a portrait of a ballet. Well, Ravel was offended and never forgave Diaghilev. He ended up publishing La Valse as a concert piece that he called a choreographic poem, and it was eventually staged by, among others, George Balanchine and Ida Rubinstein, who had also danced Ravel's Bolero. Ravel's scenario for the ballet is very specific. Swirling clouds afford glimpses through rifts of waltzing couples. The clouds scatter little by little. One can distinguish an immense hall with a whirling crowd. The scene grows progressively brighter. The light of the chandeliers bursts forth at the Fortissimo, an imperial court, about 1855. The piece takes the form of a typical Strauss waltz, a string of melodies, all more or less multiples of 16 bars long, with a slow introduction and a grand climax. Ravel gave very specific instructions in the score for the scattering of the clouds, and the lighting of the chandeliers. With a couple of quotes from his own work along the way, two dances from his Valse Noble Sentimentale, which he had written in 1911. But halfway through the work comes a twist. One of the phrases seems to be coming to a climax, but then devolves, and we find ourselves back in the swirling mists from the beginning. The melodies from the first half of the piece repeat, but with darker and in some cases more sinister orchestrations. Thank you. LaValse still conjures up images of the Vienna of Johann Strauss. In fact, Ravel almost quotes a couple of Strauss's own waltzes in the piece. But his experiences as an ambulance driver in the war had altered Ravel's attitude towards things Viennese. LaValse was no longer a tribute to the Waltz King, but something different, something much darker. The work does end with a grand climax, but it's a macabre one. Ravel's biographer R.B. Ornstein called it the reflection of a shattered dream in which the world, symbolized by the imperial court, crumbles into dust at the height of the forced and joyless revelry, end quote. Michael Steinberg went even further. LaValse, he wrote, became a bitter and ferocious fantasy, a terrifying tone poem that helped define a new language of musical nightmare. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.